This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Together we will lead our party back to the White House, and we will lead our country back to safety, prosperity, and peace. We will be a country of generosity and warmth, but we will also be a country of law and order.
That's Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump speaking at his acceptance speech last night at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. We'll have full details and reaction coming up. Also, a leading medical relief organization warns that a humanitarian catastrophe could be looming in Borno State, Nigeria. And the International Organization for Migration reports nearly 3,000 refugees and migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea to Europe have died so far this year. We'll have these stories and more, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump, the blunt political outsider who defied the odds and defeated a large field of experienced politicians in this year's primaries, formally accepted his party's presidential nomination last night. Trump promised to bring sweeping political change to create wealth and to make America safe again in a speech that excited delegates on the fourth and final day of their national convention in Cleveland. VOA National correspondent Jim Malone has more on Trump's big night from Cleveland.
It was Donald Trump's biggest political moment in the spotlight so far, and Trump was eager to seize it.
Together, we will lead our party back to the White House, and we will lead our country back to safety, prosperity, and peace. We will be a country of generosity and warmth. But we will also be a country of law and order.
With his family looking on and thousands of excited Republicans in the convention hall, Trump sought to foster party unity after a sometimes fractious convention. And he also went after his Democratic opponent, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
After 15 years of wars in the Middle East, after trillions of dollars spent and thousands of lives lost, the situation is worse than it has ever been before. This is the legacy of Hillary Clinton: death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness.
At one point, Trump was interrupted by a demonstrator.
How great are our police? And how great is Cleveland?
And later, he vowed to get tough on crime.
In this race for the White House, I am the law and order candidate.
Trump was introduced by his daughter, Ivanka, who spoke about her father's softer side.
My father not only has the strength and ability necessary to be our next president, but also the kindness and compassion that will enable him to be the leader that this country needs.
Trump repeated his vow to build a border wall with Mexico, negotiate tougher trade deals, and defeat the Islamic State group. And he closed his remarks with a now familiar campaign promise.
To all Americans tonight, in all of our cities and in all of our towns, I make this promise. We will make America strong again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again.
Hey, hey, ho, ho!
Outside the convention hall, protests continued for a fourth day, but were contained by a large police presence. The political focus now shifts to Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, who hold their convention next week in Philadelphia. Clinton supporters issued a new ad featuring past comments from Trump praising Clinton.
Hillary Clinton, I think, is a terrific woman. She really works hard, and I think she does a good job.
With the Republican convention in Cleveland now history, Donald Trump hopes to write at least one more chapter in his political story come November. Jim Malone, VOA News, at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland.
Thank you, Jim. Well, Trump gave the longest speech of his presidential bid to date, covering a wide variety of issues and painted a vision of America in dire straits. He spoke of threats from Islamic State jihadists, U.S. trade deals, which he had called bad, and rising murder rates in America's 50 largest cities. Despite the length of Trump's speech, 1 hour and 15 minutes, it was noticeably lacking in specific policy proposals, a fact that Trump's political opponents were quick to point out. My colleague Vincent McCorry is in Cleveland covering the convention and has more on the reaction to Mr. Trump's acceptance speech.
First, it was a speech that scared people. It helped to paint the United States as a very, very dangerous place, a really gloomy picture it presented of what the United States of America is today, a place where policemen are being executed, people are being killed on the street, the economy is in a mess, everything is just terrible. For his supporters, they cheered on, but when you look closely, his speech did not offer any details as to how he will fix any of those. He did not give any substance in the speech to kind of give you a sense of how he'll go about realistically fixing any of the things that he said are completely broken down.
Do you think this speech will give him the boost that he needs? Usually candidates get a big boost after their conventions. Do you think Mr. Trump will too?
It might be just among those core supporters, those who are really Trump people. They get excited. They were energized. But anybody who is looking a little bit more closely, perhaps an undecided voter, still may question the way decisions are made in business. It's not the same way decisions are made in government. You can't unilaterally just make, you know, certain changes or make things happen as if you were a dictator. This is a democracy. There are processes, there are systems, and one person, just because he's the president of the U.S., cannot unilaterally make things just happen, change treaties, make rules that will fix things just overnight. He said right from January, things are just going to change. Things don't change like that unless you're in a dictatorship. So I don't think people look closely and analyze his speech that they're going to think that he gave them some alternative to what Hillary Clinton may offer the voters. So I personally am skeptical about the long-term benefit of his talk.
What a lot of concern is that what I'm hearing is that those people that are on the fence, such as independents, the Bernie Sanders supporters, women, minorities, what is he going to do to try to get those people?
You see, what he tried to do, for example, he tried to mention every group. In the past, he has been accused of treating unfairly. For example, we can start with a speech by Ivanka. Ivanka kind of tried to make a case for Mr. Trump as this person who loves women, a man who has treated women so well in his organization. Therefore, you can trust him to give women better conditions at work. But Mr. Trump himself mentioned things like the Latinos and black people in this country have lost their jobs or are not doing well because of illegal immigrants, trying to appeal to the black Latinos by blaming immigrants for their wars, for their unemployment, for their poverty. And of course, he even tried to some extent to indicate that he's a person who will protect everybody, including gays and lesbians. He tried to throw in everybody, but I don't think he was really mentioning anything that concretely can give any of those groups, you know, hope that things are going to change for the better.
So looking at this convention of 2016, how does this compare to other Republican national conventions in the past?
As many have said, this has been the most unconventional convention. First, the person who was the star of the convention, his conventional person in the way that he presents himself, an outsider, is not politically correct. If you see how the convention itself was laid out, first there was, you can say, an over-injection of the Trump name in it. I mean, there was a Trump every night. I don't think there's been a situation where a candidate's children or the entire family speaks on every night of the convention. I think, thirdly, you can say that throughout the week, if you observe, the convention did not handle substantive things. Every speaker literally was just on the attack against Hillary Clinton. They had themes for every night, but nobody stayed on those themes. Nobody talked about how Mr. Trump will make America work again, how Mr. Trump will make America safe again. They all spend all that time attacking Clinton. So you feel that it was not as well coordinated in terms of trying to corrupt that message throughout the week so that everybody, whoever is out there, is listening, has probably not decided, could make a decision at that point.
My colleague Vincent McCorry at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 16 past the hour, here's a recap of our top story. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump formally accepted his party's presidential nomination last night. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A leading medical relief organization warns that a humanitarian catastrophe could be looming in Borno State, Nigeria. Doctors Without Borders says 500,000 people displaced by Boko Haram need food, water, medical care, and shelter. And 15% of the 27,000 people in Bama camp alone are children threatened with severe malnutrition. Natalie Roberts is the operational manager for Doctors Without Borders in Paris. She explained to VOA's William Eagle some of the challenges of getting aid to those in need.
I mean, security really is the main challenge. There's no real front line in this area. It's not like you can kind of say on that side it's unsafe and on this side it's fine. The military have obviously had large operations in the area, and there are still parts of the state that we can't access at all because they're deemed to be too unsafe. Places like Bama, I mean, essentially there's huge military presence there. We're unable to access these places without the permission of the military. And everybody is living in a situation of kind of high security, this feeling of fear all the time. They're concerned about attacks from all sides, really. And so everybody's in a state of kind of high alertness and of high fear. So it's really, for us, incredibly difficult to even get to some of these places. And once we get there, to try and be sure that we're working in an environment that is at least vaguely safe for our teams to work.
What efforts are you undertaking, especially in Obama camp, but also in Borno State as a whole?
We've been working permanently in Borno, in Maiduguri, the city, for the last 2 years. So we continue our operations there, but we're scaling up quite rapidly because Maiduguri, the town itself, has become a reference point for all these camps from outside. And at the same time, there are lots of camps around in Maiduguri. So people continue to arrive in Maiduguri in a really poor health state. So what we're finding is really problems with nutrition and just general disease. People haven't had any access to healthcare. So we're finding massive catastrophic scales of nutrition, people arriving in Maiduguri. At the same time, people in Bama and other towns like Monguno, they find it very difficult to get to Maiduguri, or they're not able to get to Maiduguri. And they're the people who've been trapped for a very long time where they are. So when you actually get to access these people, I mean, it's just catastrophic levels of malnutrition, really, that we're seeing in children, but even in adults, huge level of disease. And so for us, we're mounting, as quickly as we can, medical operations, nutritional operations, to try and bring up the level of health and to try and just decrease this scale of mortality that we're seeing.
Does treatment for children suffering from malnutrition differ from how you would help adults?
It does. Everyone is much more experienced with the treatment of malnutrition for children. It's a scientific practice. It's a medical practice. We're very used to the treatment. And in fact, the treatment is like a medical treatment. You give food, which is almost like giving a medicine. and at the same time you treat medically. Adults, we're not so used to. We don't see malnutrition in adults so often. And although it's not, you know, it's not as common as in children, we are seeing some cases in my degree. And we tend to treat children as a priority because it's the biggest killer. Children under five with malnutrition are just at very high risk of death. But, you know, we still at the same time have to think about the adults. And often children are malnourished not just because of lack of food, but because of disease and other conditions. But adults, to see adults malnourished implies that there's just a massive lack of food in the area.
You mentioned that displaced people are arriving in the state capital, Maiduguri. Is the city able to handle the influx?
Not really, no. I mean, there's a lot of camps around Maiduguri, but there's just really not much more space in the camps for people. They're not set up to accept more people. And one of the problems we're finding is that hospitals are very full. I mean, the hospitals set up in Maiduguri is designed for the original population of Maiduguri, and now the population is much higher. And so when we're bringing patients from Bama or from Monguno or from the other sort of surrounding areas that we have to evacuate out for medical care. But when we bring them to Maiduguri, it's very difficult to find a hospital bed.
That's Natalie Roberts of the humanitarian aid group Doctors Without Borders. She was speaking to VOA reporter William Eagle. Well, on just about every level, AIDS is expensive. Billions of dollars are spent on prevention, research, treatment, and major events like the International AIDS Conference. Activists say victims of the disease are paying for these costs and are suggesting a number of changes, some of them unexpected. VOA's Anita Powell takes a look at the 21st International AIDS Conference as it comes to an end.
Money is never far away from discussions about AIDS at settings like the International AIDS Conference, held this year in Durban, South Africa. From aid groups to governments to pharmaceutical companies to individual patients, everyone agrees. AIDS is expensive, and more money is needed to fight it. The political and financial issues surrounding AIDS, however, are often as complicated as the science. Lena Mengani from Doctors Without Borders says aid groups are concerned about a shortage of funding.
For example, in the next few years, people will need over $7 billion to be able to treat everybody who needs treatment. So there are these concerns about funding. But in contrast, not only is the money shrinking, what is problematic is the attack on Indian generics. India makes a lot of the medicines that are keeping people alive across the world, including people living with HIV. And the United States government is hell-bent on changing the policies of the Indian government so that the next generation of medicines that we will need are shut down.
Activists say there are unexpected financial needs beyond treatment and prevention. For example, activists stormed the stage at the conference, drowning out South Africa's health minister, to demand free condoms and sanitary napkins in South African schools. The latter item might seem counterintuitive. Sanitary pads don't prevent or treat HIV. In South Africa alone, however, studies have shown that 7 million girls miss school each month because they can't afford hygiene items. That, says activist Ntombi Zodwa Maphosa, has a bearing on the AIDS epidemic for those vulnerable girls.
It definitely makes them vulnerable in society because then they can't advance themselves and they fall prey to sexual predators, to older men, to transactional relationships. So it's like a ripple effect, and it could seem really simple, but it has like long-term effects. So it's also a tool for empowering young women to be educated and to advance in life.
Alex Smith is the director of policy and advocacy for AIDS Alabama. He cited statistics that say AIDS treatment over a lifetime could cost up to $1 million per patient. But, he said, failing to treat people will cost society much more than that.
There's that old adage that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I think that's the same with treatment. So if we are able to engage and maintain and retain people in treatment, then the overall cost to the healthcare system is decreased because as people are retained in care and remain virally suppressed, they will not transmit the virus to other people.
And then there are the billions of dollars earned by pharmaceutical companies, which are often criticized by activists for charging too much for drugs and trying to prevent competition. Drug companies say their costs are very high, that research doesn't always yield results, and that they are ultimately responsible to shareholders to make a profit. That debate continues. But there is one number that no one can ignore. 37 million. That's the number of lives lost to AIDS, representing the ultimate cost of this still raging epidemic. Anita Pell, VOA News, Durban, South Africa.
The International Organization for Migration reports nearly 3,000 refugees and migrants crossing the Mediterranean Sea to Europe have died so far this year. Most of these deaths have occurred along the dangerous route from North Africa to Italy. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
This is the earliest that reported deaths on the Mediterranean have reached 3,000 since the migration crisis hit Europe 4 years ago. In 2014, reported fatalities reached the 3,000-person mark in September. Last year, it was in October. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says having such a large number of migrants perish before the end of July this year is alarming.
It's also very important to note that we are approaching the 250,000 arrival mark. Last year, we didn't hit 3,000 until almost 1 million people had come. So to have 3,000 with a quarter of that number is an indicator of just how lethal this passage has been.
Millman says refugees and migrant flows from Turkey to Greece have almost disappeared. So he notes most of the sea traffic and fatalities are now occurring among sub-Saharan Africans, making the perilous journey from North Africa to Italy. He tells VOA about 20 migrants are dying every day in the Mediterranean Sea. He says IOM staff is talking to the Libyan Coast Guard about the dangers facing people who board smugglers' boats.
The Coast Guard has had some luck turning back voyages from Libya. We've heard in the last 6 weeks a number of cases where they've been able to turn boats back. They're also recovering bodies at an alarming rate as well. So we have mixed feelings about calling that a success.
IOM runs an assisted voluntary return and reintegration program for migrants in Libya. Millman says the agency has succeeded in repatriating thousands of stranded migrants to their homes in sub-Saharan Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African music mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. from the north to the south and from the east to the west. The African Music Mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Two-Face. Nato C.
Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here, Africa.